Welcome back to the Universalis podcast. I am Martin Kohinski, the creator of Universalis, and in this episode I'll be looking at the highlights for the week ahead, starting with Sunday the 18th of January. I am annoyed. For more than 3 weeks now, we have been celebrating the Incarnation. We have done it in terms of who Jesus is: God the baby, God the boy, God the young man. We have done it in terms of who has seen him: the ordinary Jewish people, the shepherds; the educated Jewish people, the doctors in the temple; the wise Gentiles travelling from afar to see him, the magi. We have done it in terms of Jesus' upbringing and training: the boy who knows he's special but doesn't yet know how to say how he is special; the young man given a commission from God at the River Jordan in the sight of everyone to start doing what he has to do. The logical next step is to see him start doing it, and for this reason the Sunday after the baptism of the Lord has for centuries had the gospel of the wedding feast at Cana. Except that we don't, and that is what is annoying me. Before the big reforms of the liturgy in around 1970, we had very little variety in the gospels, and usually the gospel for the Sunday was reused throughout the whole week. This week we'd be repeating the wedding feast at Cana day after day. But then the reforms came, and they were on the whole very good. Every single weekday has its own gospel now, and as for the Sundays, they've tripled. We have year A, year B, and year C, so we have three times as much gospel as before. I said it's good, and it is, but sometimes the good is its own worst enemy. When they were doing all this, some idiot decided that on the Sunday after the baptism of the Lord, that's this Sunday, you also had to have three different gospels in three different years. Therefore, 2 years out of three we can't have the wedding feast at Cana this Sunday. 2 years out of three, the history of our salvation getting underway does not begin with a party. We had our party last year, and my podcast was filled with it. This year we only have John saying something like, "There goes the Lamb of God." It's good theology, I'm sure, but there's no fun, there's no feasting, and we aren't reminded that the answer to "Why did he start his ministry when he did?" is "Because his mother pushed him." That's enough grump. There are two reasons to stop grumbling. First of all, if you have Universalis, then instead of grumbling, ask your app to show you Sunday the 19th of January 2025. It will. That is year C, and that's the year of the wedding feast at Cana. You can read all about it, and if you're subscribing to the spoken readings at Mass, you will even be able to listen to it, because there isn't any time limit to those recorded readings. The second reason to stop grumbling is this. Last year, a jolly good party was so dazzling that the week was filled with it and we couldn't think of anything else. This year, it isn't there. Think about looking up at the sky in the daytime. The sun is so dazzling that the sky is filled with its light and you can't see the stars. But when there is an eclipse, the sun is hidden, the sky goes dark, and you can see the stars and nothing else. It turns out that if you leave out the wedding feast, this week is so full of stars you are practically crushed by the constellations above you. Every day has a saint or feast somewhere in the world. Some have several. First of all, there are the saints we must all celebrate, such as St. Agnes and St. Francis de Sales. Then there are the saints we can all celebrate if we want to, such as Saints Fabian and Sebastian. And then, all over the world, there are saints who are special for that particular part of the world, and that particular part celebrates them. This week, I really do mean all over the world. We have Finland and Hawaii. We have Africa, Scandinavia, Malta and the Philippines. We even have England, twice. So instead of complaining, the way I have been, about the lack of dazzling sunshine this year, it's time to look up and see all this week's stars, and see how many ways there are of loving God and serving God in every part of the world, and how there have been from the 1st century to the 20th. Looking up at the stars, trying to name them, you can't begin to think which one to start with. I have no idea what rule to use for this week's saints either, so let me start with the earliest saint this week, Saint Publius, who is celebrated in Malta this Thursday. In about 60 AD, when St. Paul was being taken to Rome as a prisoner to be tried by Caesar, he and his guards took passage on a ship which sailed dangerously late in the season, so late that they were caught in one of the violent autumn storms of the Mediterranean. Even after the sailors had thrown all the cargo overboard to lighten it, their ship was swamped and in danger of breaking up. Paul prayed. Providentially, they saw a beach. They ran the ship onto it, and as it disintegrated, all its people made it through the waves to the shore. They were saved. When they asked, they were told the island was called Malta. The prefect of the island took them in and looked after Paul and Luke and their companions. Paul cured the prefect's father of dysentery and many other sick people as well. They stayed there 3 months until it was safe to sail again. That prefect's name was Publius. It is the tradition in Malta that Publius was converted by Paul and so became the head of the Christians there, that is, the first bishop of Malta. Malta celebrates the shipwreck itself next month, but here is the celebration of Publius, its first bishop. The Maltese are proud of having one of the oldest bishoprics in the world. From one island saint to another. Maria Anna Kub was born in Germany in 1838. Her family emigrated to America the next year and changed their name to Cope. At the age of 15, she discovered a vocation to be a Franciscan nun, but she didn't act on it. Not for another 9 years. As I was reading her story just now, I thought how important that is. We are told to admire people like St. Francis, who gave up everything for Christ, and we do admire people like St. Francis. But Marianne Cope had a family who could not survive without her support. She is an example to the many, many people who can't give everything up even if they want to, because they have others who depend on them. And leaving our families and dependents to starve is never right. In the end, it did become possible for her family to survive on their own, and she did join her convent. She helped to found schools and hospitals for poor immigrants, and this was a time when new immigrants could and did die of starvation in the land they had come to in such hope. Now that island, it's Hawaii. We think of long beaches, huge waves, happy surfers, but in the 19th century it was suffering a crippling epidemic of leprosy against which the islanders seemed to have no immunity. The Belgian saint Damien de Verster had set up a leper colony on the small Hawaiian island of Molokai in 1873, and Marianne Cope set up a home for girls there in 1888. The next year Damien died of leprosy himself. He's now Saint Damien of Molokai, and Marianne took over the boys' home he had set up and ran both those homes for 30 years. One final group of Pacific Islands, the Philippines. When Ferdinand Magellan was undertaking his circumnavigation of the world, he landed on the island of Cebu. The Queen of Cebu was converted to Christianity and baptized, and Magellan gave her an image of the child Jesus. Magellan died on a neighbouring island, having been sent there to kill one of the enemies of the king. 40 years later, the Spaniard Miguel López de Legazpi landed on the same island and found an image of the child Jesus, almost certainly the same one that had been given to the queen. That image is venerated in the basilica on the island of Cebu, and the Feast of the Holy Child is celebrated each year with great magnificence on the 15th of January. It is such an important feast that it replaces the Sunday. So at least the Filipinos managed to have their party to kick off the year at the end of the Christmas season. Now we can get back to cold and rainy Europe in the Middle Ages. On Monday, England can celebrate St. Wulfstan, a Benedictine monk who was Bishop of Worcester from 1062 to 1095. He was the first English bishop to make a thorough visitation of his diocese. He insisted on discipline, sound administration, and clerical celibacy. He was such an effective bishop that when William of Normandy conquered England in 1066 and removed almost all Englishmen from positions of power, he kept Wulfstan in place. Wulfstan even worked alongside the newly imported Archbishop of Canterbury, Lanfranc, to abolish the slave trade which took slaves from Bristol for sale in Viking Ireland. He was acclaimed as a saint soon after he died and canonized only 100 years later. Because the Reformation obliterated everything worthwhile, we tend to think of England as an isolated backwater, only occasionally receiving dribbles of enlightenment from the continent. So I was surprised to find that St. Henry of Uppsala, who is celebrated as a missionary in Denmark, Sweden, Norway, and Finland, was actually an Englishman. He came to Sweden in 1053 with Nicholas Breakspear, the man who would later become Pope Hadrian IV, and the only English pope ever. Henry's first job was probably to organize the church in Finland, where there had already been some Christians for 200 years. It's hard to know much more about him because the records are fragmentary, but he has been venerated since at least the 14th century, and the Catholic Cathedral in Helsinki is dedicated to him. His feast is also on Monday. While we're in Scandinavia, I got an email from Norway just before Christmas. I've said that what we know about Hawaii is beaches and surfing and so on, until we discover it isn't. Well, what we know about Scandinavia is northern darkness half the year with the northern lights in the sky and a stern and sombre Protestantism. Until we read a message like this. Here in Sogndal, Norway, there is a growing number of Catholics, but we do not yet have a church building or parish. Our parish group use an office room in the Red Cross building for occasional, very occasional, masses by visiting non-Norwegian-speaking priests. So you'll understand how important Universalis is for me as a permanent daily connection with the church's worship. This makes me feel humble and proud both at the same time. Proud that Universalis should be helping like this, and humble because I don't deserve to be doing things that have such a big effect. Anyway, it's not me doing it, it's the Holy Spirit among these people. It is usual to worry about the state of the church in tired old Europe, but I wonder. Think for a moment of a forest, a tired old forest, if you like. At odd times through the year, you might hear a crash as this or that old wood-wormed tree falls to the ground. What you don't hear and you barely see is the young saplings springing up here, there, and everywhere. Some of them will die instead of growing. Some of them will grow into funny shapes. But with the sap and the sunshine, some will grow to become huge and healthy trees. We can't control any of that. It is in God's hands. But we can encourage it any way we can and draw hope from it. By the way, I've just looked it up about dark Scandinavia. Sogndal had 6.5 hours of daytime today, measuring from sunrise to sunset. London only had 8.5, so there's not much difference. And in Sogndal in the summer, you can go for a walk at midnight without a torch. There's another Henry this week. He is Blessed Henry Suso, a Dominican friar from Germany who died in 1366. His feast is on Friday, and the Dominicans celebrate it. Henry was an expert at contemplative prayer, which is something I've never dared to try. He wrote in detail about mysticism, the kinds of mystical experiences there are, and what they can teach us about ultimate reality. It's hard to define mystical experience, probably harder still to describe it once you've experienced it, but perhaps mystical could cover anything where we get experience of some kind of reality without the usual methods of the five senses, reason, and the conscious mind. For Christians, mystical experience of God is something we don't get by our own initiative. If I said, "Let's have a mystical experience now," then if anything at all came of it, it would be a fake. Real mystical experiences are given when God takes the initiative. Our part in it is just not getting in God's way, not thinking, not speaking, not doing any of the things that we normally do to construct our own reality around us. Mystical experience is God's reality coming to us. Henry Suso's books on mysticism are still quoted by scholars today as major authorities. One more, monk. I promised you Africa, and I haven't given you Africa yet. On Tuesday, St. Cyprian Michael Iwene Tansi is celebrated in Nigeria and Kenya and across southern Africa and in Nottingham in the English Midlands. Cyprian was an Igbo born in the southern Nigerian protectorate in 1903. He became a priest, and in 1950 he came to England to the Cistercian Abbey of Mount St. Bernard near Nottingham. The plan was that he would train as a monk and then return to his diocese in Nigeria to set up a Trappist monastery there. He was an exemplary monk, wholly absorbed in prayer, but he died of an aortic aneurysm in 1964 before he could go out to found his monastery. Universalis has the Yoruba language in it because the Nigerian Bishops' Conference found a precise and industrious priest to provide the Yoruba texts. Igbo has been a lot slower than I expected, partly because the Igbo language is variable across its range, and establishing what dialect of it would be acceptable to everyone liturgically turned out to be a delicate and diplomatic process. Perhaps St. Cyprian's prayers will help to get the thing going. I'm not going to mention Agnes or Fabian or Sebastian, all of them saints from the 3rd or 4th centuries about whom we don't know all that much. But I can't not mention St. Francis de Sales, who was Bishop of Geneva in the early 1600s. St. Francis was born in Savoy, not far from Geneva. When he became a priest, despite the objections of his father, he started by re-evangelizing the people of his home district, who had gone over to Calvinism. He was constantly in danger of his life from hostile Calvinists, but he preached constantly and with such effectiveness that after 4 years most of the people had returned to the church. He was then made Bishop of Geneva and devoted himself to building up the diocese. This was quite a challenge, given that only 50 years before, John Calvin himself had been ruling Geneva like an Ayatollah. He had even had the scientist Michael Servetus burned alive for teaching the circulation of the blood. But Francis's preaching was driven by love, not a desire to win a contest. In the end, it was a Calvinist minister who said, "If we honoured anyone as a saint, I know of no one since the days of the apostles more worthy of it than this man." For us today, it's mostly a different part of St. Francis's teaching that is important. He taught that we can all attain a devout and spiritual life, whatever our position in society. Holiness is not reserved for monks and hermits alone. He wrote that religious devotion does not destroy, it perfects, and his spiritual counsel is dedicated to making people more holy by making them more themselves. Perfection is for everyone. St. Francis de Sales is celebrated on Saturday across the whole world. So there's our collection of stars in the constellation of saints this week. It has a certain randomness and lack of shape, but then so do real constellations. Orion is not an arrangement of stars in the shape of a hunter. It is just some stars that happen to be in the direction they happen to be in. We are the ones who make patterns out of them. If you are frustrated rather than thrilled by the random sparkling of this week's saints, look deeper. There is a theme to this constellation. The theme is what it always is, every week. Life, and God, and us. And to help tie this week together and give it a specific theme, we have a steady series of readings at Mass and in the Office of Readings. It's worth making time to read or listen to them every day. This week, the first readings at Mass tell the whole story of Saul and David and Jonathan. That is a powerful story, full of drama and love and anger and passion. Read it. As for the Office of Readings, this week and next, we have Moses' final speech to the Israelites before he dies. Here are the commandments. Keep them. It is a magnificent sequence. Again, read or listen. That's all for this week. If you'd like to write to us about anything, send an email to universalis@universalis.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Have a good week in every sense, and let's pray for one another.